book, Struggle to Be the Sun Again, Dr. Chung dedicates her book to her mothers, her birth mother, her surrogate mother, and her feminist mother. Dr. Chung didn't know about her birth mother until she was 31 years old. Fortunately, it was after she had known her feminist mother, because it was out of her feminism that in her culture she could accept and celebrate her birth mother. Her birth mother is a Min Young, and it is together that they share their life and share women's struggle. In her book, in her writing in Inheriting Our Mother's Garden, she has written a letter to her mothers. And in the letter, she invites them to sit with her under Eve's tree and eat the apples. Dr. Chung.
Hello, sisters. How are you this evening? Are you having a good time? After Maryam Bernice talk about their struggle and their wisdom, I wanted to say, sisters, evening is deep, and we had enough wisdom for today. Let's go to our hotel and relax. That's what I wanted to say. But listen, sisters, I came all the way from Korea to speak tonight. Across the Pacific Ocean, 9,000 miles. So even though I'm thinking about your bodily ecology, I think I have to say what my sisters in Asia wanted to share with you tonight. My name is Chung Hyun Kyung. I'm an Asian feminist liberation theologian from Korea. And I'm also a recovering colonized Christian and a recovering feminist fundamentalist. And I am proud. Tonight, I would like to share with you what religious imagination means to me when I look at it from the perspective of third world Asian and woman's life experiences. Many times in Asia, I wonder, whenever I listen to my sisters' struggle, what made them survive in the midst of this severe suffering and death? What is it? What made them choose life? Not just choosing life. What made them keep dancing and keep singing with joy? And what are the survival wisdom of these sisters in struggle? So I always ask these questions wherever I go in Asia to be with my sisters in struggle. And tonight, I want to share with you one sister's story. Very poor, illiterate woman from Korea. I love to tell these stories again and again Because it seems like a paradigmatic story for Asian women's struggle. So I want to call this story, story of Jihae. Jihae means wisdom. Actually, she's a no-name woman. I don't know her name, but I want to share her story with you. This is not a fiction. This is a non-fiction documentary, true story. So you can really trust me for saying the real things happen in this world. This story happened some time ago in a small province in Korea. Jihae lived with her mother and son. She might be a single mother because no reports mentioned about her husband. Being a single mother in Korea without a husband may be the lowest thing a woman can do in Korea. One day, Jihae's only son played on the street, running, laughing, playing with his balls. Suddenly, one car hit him, ran over, and killed him right there. In the car, there was a very powerful politician in the province. The accident was clearly the fault of the politician, but he refused to take responsibility for it, since he had so much power with the police in the province. He managed to avoid blame. Jihae and her mother cried, cried, and cried, holding the cold blood body of this boy. But nobody seemed to listen to their cry. And there is no justice for these two poor women. Sometime later, the politician ran for Congress. The slain boy's grandmother felt so angry that she made and distributed the leaflets, charging the politician with his crime at his nominating convention. The politician responded by suing the grandmother for libel. Of course, the powerless grandmother lost the case because of a corrupt trial and was imprisoned. In anger and despair, Jihae almost lost herself. After many days of cry and sigh, she determined to create her own path of revenge. But what did she have in worldly sense? No money, no education, no husband, no political power, no advocates for her. But her Han is a typical Korean feeling, is accumulated anger and sadness and injustice done on you. So it made some lump, some kind of cancer in your soul. So you become like a pressure cooker. You just want to let it out, but there's no path for letting it out. That is a sense of Han. Many Westerners ask me, please translate Han into English, but I don't have any word for this word. But when I listen to black people's song, when they talk, they sing about, oh, today I feel so blue. It seems like a Han is something like a feeling blue. But her Han, the Jihae's Han, made her restless. Her boy, her mother, came back to her in her dreams and pushed her, make the wrong right. So Jihae stood up. She determined to fight for justice, no matter what. In a humble house, she made an altar. There she put the portrait of the politician, police chief, judge, and politician's lawyer, and which she drew all their faces on the big paper. Then, every morning, in front of a bowl of pure water, she prayed for justice to all the deities she knew. Hananim, which is Korean traditional god, Gwanhun Jangnim, which is a warrior god from shamanistic tradition, And 예수님, which is Jesus. And she prayed and prayed and prayed with all her heart, body and soul. Then after prayer, Jie shot each portrait, a powerful man with a bow and arrow, politician, police chief, lawyers, and everybody. She just shot with a bow and arrow. Then she prayed to God, "Oh, compassionate God of justice, let them perish." The rumor of her prayer and action began to spread all over the province. In Korean cultural mindset, if somebody did this curse for you for 100 days, you would be dead soon. So you better be careful with the Korean woman. If you make a Korean woman very angry, your life will be in danger. Finally, the politician who had hurt her became very frightened, because we Korean people have this collective unconsciousness that this kind of voodoo will hurt us. So what he did was, he knew Jia's ritual would lead to his death. In order to stop this spiritual energy directed against them, all these men released the Jia's mother from prison, acknowledged their fault, and finally compensated her for her son's death. This is a story of victory. This is a story of a Korean woman's spirituality and her survival wisdom. She didn't have anything, and her deity just didn't limit it in Christianity, Buddhism, or shamanism. Her deity is life itself. So she called all these deities who can give life to her. And she made the wrong right in her life. Then why? Why this story is not the main source of Korean people's theology? Because out of our long theological education, we are brain damaged. So I talked to my student, you know, I have a PhD from Union Theological Seminary. It means I have permanent head damage. PhD, permanent head damage. So you have to be careful not to believe everything I say. And you have to develop your own theological imagination. Korea has everything. We have a long history of people's struggle. We have a very rich religion and culture. We have a very active Christian church. Why we could not create our own creative theology? Because we are lacking creative imagination. So when Asian women get together, we talk about these women, these erased, murdered, and suffocated woman's story. How could we bring this woman back to our center of theology? How can we do that? That is our main concern. So when we gather together for women's conference in Asia, I ask them, what kind of church do you want? And some women from Philippines said, what we want is church, the church of risen women. And our patron saint is Mary Magdalene. And our entering ritual, the baptism, is in front of all congregation, we stand up and we bite the apple and say, what kind of taboo we have been broken lately? Then we confess, then all congregation responded to this newcomer taking their own apple and biting and say amen. That will be a new ritual for the Church of Risen Women. Because the reason we talk about Church of Risen Women is in our history, especially in Asia, many Asian women become the major victim of militarism and violence against women, and worldwide sex tourism, Asia became almost the Brussels of the world. And nowadays, many Korean women and Filipino women and Japanese women, we are trying to find out what Japanese military, Japanese soldiers did to Korean women and Chinese women and Filipino women during the World War II. According to a report, Japanese soldiers used the Korean women. Korean women forced to have sex with a Japanese soldier, sometimes more than 50 soldiers a day. And their stories are totally erased until recently. And now, because of a feminist movement in Korea and in Japan, these women came out and break the silence. And they talk about what they have experienced. This is the story of resurrection. All these women are members of Church of Risen Women. And I want to celebrate their presence in our life. When I look at what feminist theology and feminist movement accomplished in our generation, I want to name the three things. One is we break the silence, and we name the evil of patriarchy, and we remember the saint, the strong women who gave life to us. I really honor what first generation of feminists did for us. We need to break the silence in order to let our cry heard by all the people in the world. But after all these years of breaking the silence, what we experience right now is we have been breaking silence all these years, but it seems like not many people are listening to us. And we are asking, then what should we do about this? And especially in this age of worldwide rise of fundamentalism and feminist backlash, what can we do? And ironically, many Asian women say something very different. They say, we say, this is a time for us to reclaim our original silence, where every wholeness and creativity come from. So whenever I go, wherever I go, in India, Sri Lanka, Philippines, in women's group, we start our meetings with meditation, breathing, and out of that deep silence, we wanted to find original voice, which is there before we are silenced. The second, naming the evil. This is something we really honored what our first generation feminist theologians did for us. Yes, we named a lot of evil in this world. Patriarchy, capitalism, racism, heterosexism, classism. But now, second generation feminist theologians like us, we say, naming the evil doesn't necessarily casting out the evil. In the Bible, we said, you name the evil lose its power. But that's not the experience of us. We named all these isms, and we had a very serious social analysis. But still, they are there with all their power. Then what shall we do about this? We are talking about living our wholeness right now, no matter what kind of circumstance oppress us. So I want to think about life theology or live theology. So we become a theologian like it's like a live show. Every theologian should be a fully alive person. So whenever you see that theologian, you want to just study feminist theology because she or he is so alive. So this is a time we really build a live theology, and live theologian who live the wholeness, reality of a wholeness right now. And third, our sisters the first generation of feminist theologian talk about remembering, because we are so dismembered. We're dismembered because of our ideological difference, because of our interest conflict. But what we need to do is remember all this dismembered body of our community. This is very important, and with this legacy, what we want to build on in this kind of a reincarnation. So within us, there must be men and women, east and west, past and future, all live within us. Especially in Asia, our ancestors and our children are already with us in spirit. So somehow, Hyeongkyung is not just Hyeongkyung. I'm collective Hyeongkyung. Within Hyeongkyung, I have 100 generations of women living within me. And within me, I have 100 generations of young women and men who are coming next to me. Not just young women and men, trees, mountains, ocean, all living within me. How could we live this cosmic reality within me? And how could we live this cosmic awareness, cosmic connectedness with the whole living beings around us? That is our task. Knowing all these wisdoms and remembering jihe and remembering the legacy of a church of risen women, I want to say two things from my sister's experience of wound and hurt. Many Asian women are broken-hearted because of our history, because of our colonialism, because of sex tourism, because of militarism around us. But somehow I have a very deep hope among us, because our heart is not just broken apart. Our heart is broken open to whole suffering of the world. When we learn how to suffer with others, it is the beginning of wisdom and compassion. So I want to share this power of wisdom and compassion with all of you. And another is our experience of broken body experiences. Broken body. Under Japanese colonization and American colonization in many parts of Asia. But because our body is so broken, there are so many movements in entire Asia to heal our bodily presence. So wherever I go in many parts of Asia, many sisters and priests and ministers, they learn how to do acupuncture, acupressure, and energy healing. And we really try to heal our body and soul with the power, the life-giving energy of the Holy Spirit. I think this is a very good movement, because so far we always try to change the structure injustice, but we didn't pay much attention to this brokenness in our concrete body and soul. So now it seems like this healing of the structure change, bodily healing, and psychic healing comes together in many parts of Asia. So when you do this, I can see when these women get healed from their wound, I can see the taste of resurrection. So this is the message from the Church of a Risen Woman. Don't you think this message of compassion and wisdom and this message of entire healing is much better than the pastoral letter of Paul or pastoral letter from Vatican? So I want you to remember these three changes in Asia, like reclaiming our silence and living the wholeness, making life theology here and now, and reincarnating all these spirits of past and future and present in our own community. Thank you.